Welcome to the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. I'm Sheng Peng, editor-in-chief of San Jose Hockey Now. You can also find my work at MEC Sharks and on Twitter at Sheng_Peng.
And I'm Keegan McNally. You can find me on Twitter at half_hockey, at my website half-wallhockey.com, or at San Jose Hockey Now. This week, some news.
Yeah, we have pretty big news. Obviously, the Sharks have hired their new head coach, Ryan Warsawski. And we have a special guest, perfect guy to talk about Ryan Warsawski, we think, Henry Thrun. And we have Henry Thrun on. We thought he'd be the perfect guest because Henry was a rookie last year. One of Ryan Warsawski's primary jobs will be the development of the Sharks' young players. And Henry and Ryan worked closely together last year because Warsawski was running the Sharks' defense.
Yeah, he talks all about his time with Ryan last year and just some of the things he's kind of coached him through a difficult season and how excited he is for the future. So great interview, as always. Hope you guys stick around for it. Before we get there, like you mentioned, we have the biggest news, the end of Ryan Warsawski watch.
Head coach watch.
We're going to get some of our initial reactions of the hiring of Ryan Warsawski. We're going to talk a little bit about possibly some of his staff, including Brian Wiseman, some rumors related to that. The need for a new defense and penalty kill coach, as ours has been promoted to head coach. And then a little bit about the other candidates and why Warsawski seems to be the choice for Mike Greer instead of those other candidates that we mentioned. Mm-hmm. Lastly, we have a few things to talk about, related to some of the combine interviews.
I found out a few more combine interviews that the Sharks had.
Yeah. Not too much news. Little trickles, before we get to the draft, but, that'll be, what we got for this week for you guys. All right. So what did you think about the hiring? Let's start with that.
Yeah. I think I'm wait and see on it. I think that everything I've heard about Ryan is that he's a good coach, that he should be a good development coach. But I think obviously, too, a lot of it's going to be what kind of team is constructed around him, what he has to work with. My guess, my understanding, I've been saying this consistently this offseason, that I think Mike Greer knows that he has to put a better team on the ice around Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith. And so Ryan should have more to work with than David Quinn did have last year. And so then the next step is we'll see what he does with it. But I think this is not any kind of criticism on a Warsawski. I don't know if there's any hire out there that I thought, oh, wow, this is a slam dunk hire. This is going to be the hire that will take the Sharks to the promised land, because the Sharks were so bad last year that I don't know who can necessarily. Yep. I think there are a lot of coaches who probably can make it better somehow, right? But the most important thing is the improvement of the roster. Nonetheless, though, there are a few elements of Warsawski that kind of stand out that maybe make him a better candidate than some people. Mm-hmm. One of the things that obviously stands out is his development track record. And he took the Chicago Wolves to the Calder Cup in 2022. He led the South Carolina Stingrays to the Kelly Cup Final in 2017 ECHL. And he's had a number of very good players kind of develop and grow up under him. Jalen Chatfield, Seth Jarvis played a little bit under him. Luke Evangelista, a few guys like that, right, that seem to have done well under him. And that's kind of what we talked with Henry Thrun about, just Ryan's touch as a development person. Mm-hmm. And one thing that was told to me by GM Wendell Young, or then GM Wendell Young of the Chicago Wolves, when the Wolves won a Calder Cup, he told me that Ryan is a relationships person. And he knows how to build strong relationships. He gets belief and buy-in from his guys. And so that's going to be important. Obviously, he's got to build those relationships with your Will Smith, with your Macklin Celebrini, with your William Eklund. And so he sounds like he's a guy that's going to be good for that. Something else that I've heard recently is that maybe he's got a little bit more edge than, say, a David Quinn. That's something that I thought might be something that the Sharks were looking for.
Sure.
And so I have actually this funny quote that I've been asking, besides what's in the story. I came out with a story yesterday. I think that's when the hire was announced, right? Sorry, I'm sort of, it's been a long day. So I believe it was yesterday, or is it Thursday?
It's been a long week.
It's been a long week, right? Anyway, so story came out. Actually, Henry Thrun was quoted in it. Wendell Young was quoted in it. Spencer Carberry, Washington Capitals head coach, was quoted in it, right? And I've still been trying to get sort of quotes from people and that sort of thing, right? So there's some stuff that wasn't in the story. Sure. Anyway, I asked somebody, do you know Warsawski at all? And he's like, well, I don't know him really well, but this was a direct quote from this source. I thought this was hilarious. A few years back, I was in a, I quote, a few years back, I was in the press box in Chicago. This is AHL. It overlooked the Warsawski bench. For three periods, all he did was yell and curse. Every other word was four letters. And so maybe the Sharks do need a little bit more of a kick in the ass there. And it's not that he goes necessarily overboard, because I'm also told, like I said, he's a good relationships person. Wendell Young said he's not a demeaning coach, so I guess those four-letter words weren't necessarily directed at specific players so much, but just situationally, I guess. And so I think he's got maybe a little bit of that, too, that kind of edge. And then I've also been told that Warsawski is very direct. You know, communicating with him is very easy because he just tells you what's up, good or bad. And Henry had a great example of that in his interview coming up. I don't want to give that away. But yeah. I also had a very, very good quote from that I got back recently from Kevin LeBanc, actually. And Kevin, I think, is a good person to ask, actually, in this case, because Kevin is not necessarily going to be with the Sharks anymore, right? And so he doesn't really have any reasons to sort of protect anybody or to, like, be too enthusiastic about anybody. But he was actually pretty enthusiastic about Warsawski. And so this is a quote from Kevin LeBanc. I think he will do a great job. He's very direct and good at communicating with the players. He has the presence of a head coach. And so I like that. I heard that from somebody else. I talked with the player agent. The player agent said, I like talking with Ryan because he tells me what's going on with my client, good or bad.
Yep.
And so I think that the players do appreciate that. And so I think that will help Warsawski out too. And so anyway, in sort of my first dig into Ryan Warsawski qualities, those were the things that came up.
Yeah, you're right. I don't want to spoil the Henry Thrun interview, but if I talk about it, y'all are just going to like skip to the end of the video and watch it. But yeah,
you should skip to the end of it. Yeah.
Yeah, why not? We're just rambling here.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. But he does. He mentions just that quality of recognizing when, you know, you're playing poorly, recognizing when you're playing well, and why you're, you know, why he thinks you're doing bad or good. And that's like a very and it seemed like Henry like really trusted his opinion, and that's like the first step, is building that, you know, player coach relationship, that you trust what they're telling you and you're not just like tuning them out, going one in one ear out the other because like you've heard the f-bomb 600 times from this guy. Like it's there's like that trust you have to build.
I assume in the one-on-one conversation there's less f-bombs. I assume that more of the f-bombs are reserved for the referees and
sure. Yeah.
Yeah, or it's a get fucking going. It's not fuck you. It's a get fucking going. You know?
It's not Bruce Boudreau. He's not like just cursed into the wind, you know. And it's like, but anyway, yeah. I my initial reaction, I liked it. I think I'm more excited about this kind of hire, and I think this matches a lot of fan sentiment about this kind of hire because of where the state where the Sharks are. They're in a rebuild. They're in a young state in terms of their team and their prospects coming up, and we haven't mentioned it yet, but Ryan Warsawski is currently the youngest head coach in the NHL, which is crazy. He's 36, and Mark Edward Vlasic is 37. One of the players that he's going to presumably be coaching is older than him, which is very rare for the NHL, extremely rare. So, and yeah, that was my initial reaction. Is I'm excited that it wasn't part of the coaching carousel that kind of gets reused and recycled. Competitive teams like to have coaches that are competitive and have won before, so they keep hiring them. This is something new, and I think that's a interesting thing for the Sharks, especially interesting to report on and follow as we do. So that's my reaction. I like it. I think we'll mention in a bit the other candidates, but you know, I think this is, it seemed like it was time for Ryan Warsawski to have a head coaching gig. It felt like. So this is it. Head coaching gig in the NHL, I should mention.
Yeah, maybe so. One of the things that I did observe looking at his track record is that this actually fits into how he ascended in the ECHL and the AHL, that he started with South Carolina a couple of years as assistant coach and then became the head coach. And the Charlotte Checkers, but that organization, he started as assistant coach for the Checkers.
Yep.
And then he became the head coach of the Checkers and then moved on to the Wolves when the Hurricanes changed affiliation. And mm-hmm. so same kind of process. And then with the Sharks, a couple years as assistant. And yep. let's not forget, he interviewed for the head coaching job in 2022. So he was highly regarded back then, even as a young coach. And then he becomes the head coach. So this kind of seemed to follow that path. And hopefully, maybe he is that young phenom coach that the Sharks every team desperately needs. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's why I'm sort of waiting to see about it, because I honestly don't know what he's going to be like once he gets behind the bench. I'm not going to judge him on his success in lower levels, because every coach you hire at the head coaching level in the NHL will have had a lot of success at yep. the lower levels. And so I'm still waiting to see, but it does seem he obviously does have a promising track record overall, even if he was part of a losing Shark situation the last couple of years.
There's something exciting about that. Growing with a younger coach that hasn't had this opportunity. It's just like the prospects that are coming up. They're, mm-hmm. you know, they've done very well at the lower levels, and now it's time for the main thing. It's just, yeah, you wonder if, like, with a new coach, with completely new players, young guys, never been in the NHL before, like, is he going to be able to handle the, you know, that step up? Is there enough oversight in the system? So we'll see. That kind of brings us to who's going to be around him, I guess, the assistant coaches. Good segue today. but let's talk about Brian Wiseman, because I think it's an interesting story, non-story, that Jeff Merrick had talked about Brian Wiseman. So what has he got to say?
Well, Jeff Merrick said on his show, I believe on Friday, the day after it was, or maybe the day it was announced, that the Sharks, it sounded like, I think the words that Merrick used were, it's likely that Brian Wiseman will come back as assistant coach.
Sure.
And Merrick had previously reported that there was interest kind of around the league in Wiseman and hiring him. Merrick is crediting Wiseman for a lot of the Sharks' power play success. And the Sharks were, January 31st on, I believe they had the seventh best power play in the league at 25%, around thereabouts. I do know that a lot of analytics indicate that they might have just been on a shooting percentage surge. They had the best shooting percentage at 5-on-4 after January 31st. And they didn't get a lot of shot volume. They didn't necessarily get a lot of chances, that sort of thing, right? But I don't want to judge based on that part either, that, oh, it's just all PDO, all luck or whatever. I want to dig into that more and talk with somebody tactically to get a sense if there was something real in what Brian Wiseman was doing.
Yep.
Or it just was luck. The other part of it, too, I wonder about, too, is that when the Sharks hired Wiseman, I was under the impression that he and Scott Gordon would both be working on a power play together. I don't know if Wiseman sort of took more of that responsibility. I'm not really sure how that got divided in the end there. So I'm also trying to figure that out, and also trying to figure out Scott Gordon, if he's coming back or not.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another kind of part that I do want to mention. I don't want to just give credit to Wiseman when it's possible that Scott may have had more to do with it than is sort of being put out there. I'm not really sure. I don't know either way. But anyway, so I do think that's an interesting thing to dig into, that how kind of legitimate it is, right? That maybe it was a little smoke and mirrors, or maybe not. Maybe there was something that Wiseman was doing. Wiseman was a part of the Edmonton Oilers power play from 2019 to 22. I think Glenn Gulitzen is sort of the mastermind of it, or whatever. And easy to be the mastermind when you start with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl on your power play, of course. Yep. But anyway, though, when Wiseman was a part of the Oilers power play, or helping Gulitzen, or however that worked out, that the Oilers power play was 27%, I think, from 2019 to 2022. So that's a very good power play. So that's something that I think is a good sort of thing to dig into, that I can't dig into now because I need to talk with somebody or with people more tactically to see what Wiseman was doing. Mm-hmm. And why the power play was so successful, and can that translate to the Sharks next year and in the coming years? Otherwise, in terms of other coaches, Brian Warsawski was working with a defense and a penalty kill. And so Warsawski will sort of have to replace himself there. And so I wonder who he's going to hire there. The one obvious name that sticks out when you look at Warsawski's resume is Patrick Dwyer, who was assistant coach in Charlotte and with the Chicago Wolves. But Dwyer is with the Minnesota Wild right now. As I said, he actually was just promoted to assistant coach in season under John Hines. And so I don't know if his contract allows him to leave when it's a lateral move, right?
Yeah.
And I actually don't know Warsawski and Dwyer's relationship. We just assume because they're on the same, you know, they were on the same staff for a number of years there, that maybe that is sort of his right. Typically, a head coach has sort of a right-hand man, that sort of thing, right? That kind of situation. And so not sure about that part of it and who is going to take that role. Let's say Brian Wiseman does indeed come back and run the power play and forwards. And we know that Thomas Spear, I reported that a couple months ago, he's coming back with the goalies. Mm-hmm. And so wonder about the defense and penalty kill. One thing I do wonder too, looking at the staff, if it is indeed Warsawski and Wiseman, that there isn't a lot of experience there at the NHL. Yep. Not a ton of. Wiseman has a lot of assistant experience in the NHL level, so I should mention that. But maybe somebody with some head coaching experience. Actually, like, Scott Gordon fits the resume, but it could be somebody else. Like who, though? Who's he got in mind?
Bob Bugner. Boom. Think about it. He's defense coach, defense first, familiar with the Sharks, head coaching.
He's got a
experience.
Job.
I know. I'm just joking.
But yeah, yeah, I believe that kind he's of guy. Also associate coach with Detroit, too. So that's, yeah. This would not be a move up for him. And also, I don't even know why he'd come back. Yeah, but
I know,
actually,
I know.
Though,
now but somebody like him, you know, like has like head coaching experience, is a defense first guy that right. like is, you know, maybe just kind of between jobs or in the latter half of his career or something. Somebody with a little bit more experience, I think, on this staff would be good.
Yeah. Actually, I wonder what Jack Capuano is doing.
Yeah, there you go.
There's a veteran guy. I know he works with, I think he works with defense, but he actually, I think he's assistant coach somewhere, but that's just a name that jumped out of my head. I know he also has like a New England connection too. I believe he's good friends with David Quinn. So that's all, you know, it's all a circle there. Actually, with a Patrick Dwyer going back to him, if the Sharks were to hire him as associate coach, that would be a step up for him. And that would be a legitimate reason to move from Minnesota. But again, though, you have no one with head coaching experience, NHL head coaching experience there.
Yeah.
So it'd be nice maybe to have somebody like that. I'm not saying that is like a must, but that's something that stands out to me as could be a good sounding board for Ryan Warsawski. Obviously, he has a lot of names on his phone that he can call or whatever in a pinch, right? But might be nice to have somebody around with some NHL head coaching experience. All kind of speculative right now. I think a big part of it, too, a lot of these questions, some of these questions will be answered on Monday when the Sharks introduce Ryan Warsawski. We'll get a better sense. We'll ask about Wiseman. We'll see who they're thinking about or who they're looking at for the other assistant coach role. We'll ask about Scott Gordon too. So we'll kind of see, we'll have a better sense then. But right now, though, that's sort of some guesses of what maybe they could be looking for.
Yeah. Anybody that can, back to Wise, anybody that can turn William Eklund into a power play scorer is a, you know, plus in my book. That was, I mean, William's been doing that himself. For
yeah,
a couple
I'll give
years
William
now.
Some credit for working on his shot. I'm not going to give that all to Brian Wiseman. And
but again, he has improved. Wonder, you know,
I mean, the whole power play was successful, but it could be smoke and mirrors. I know that that's a lot of sort of the more analytically inclined Sharks fans out there. I've seen a couple of things, right? It's quite possible. I don't know. And so I think it's worth digging into. And so I'll try to get into that more over the summer.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about why it made sense that they hired Ryan, but let's talk about why maybe it didn't make sense. Because why? Basically, last year the defense and penalty kill were terrible, and that was the primary job of one Ryan Warsawski, correct?
Right.
So why does this kind of move for him make sense if, like, the Sharks had a horrible team that did horrible in the areas that he was coaching?
I think that this suggests that Quinn wasn't fired because of the results. Because if you're hiring or firing based on results, Quinn sure. and Warsawski and all those guys would never work in NHL again, right?
Yeah.
But of course, David Quinn just got hired by the Penguins to actually to do the to fulfill the role I believe that Warsawski did for the Sharks last year, to run the defense. And actually, I think on the Pens it'll be the power play anyway, though. So I think a lot of that is
there to make he's there to make Erik Karlsson a 100-point player again. Right. That's what Quinn's there for.
Definitely David Quinn had a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
And so I think that while it is a curious look to hire somebody off of the staff that led that was essentially the worst team of the salary cap era, arguably the worst team of the last 30 years. Actually was having this argument with somebody I don't know if it was just over text or something like that. And the one team that we could think of that, okay, probably the Sharks can beat in the 7-game series that we feel pretty good about over the last 30 years was the expansion Thrashers team. That team was pretty bad. But expansion Blue Jackets, expansion Wild, expansion Panthers. I'm picking those teams over the Sharks. It was a
really bad Sabres team and when they were trying to get McDavid. But
right, that's a really bad team, but the Sharks were pretty bad too. Like,
awful.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. So, and there's some bad Ottawa Senators team that bleed over. If you like literally the last 30 years from 93, 94 on, there's some bad Senators teams too that there's an argument, but I'm saying there's an argument, argument for the Sharks team as the worst. And I think I still stand by it, except for maybe that Thrashers team. But anyway, though. Yeah, again, it was in the personnel. So I think that there are other reasons why Quinn Grier didn't work out there. And sure. So leading into, unless you have something else to say about sort of the why not Warsawski, right, Camp, right? I know, again, not really. It's a questionable look, but I'm not too concerned about that part of just the look of it. It just, is the guy a good coach or not, right? And if you concede that it's probably more personnel than anything, then that absolves actually Quinn, but also absolves Warsawski of a lot too, which I tend to think that it's more of that. But it also leads into another question. Why Warsawski over a Sturm or other candidates, right?
Yep.
So one thing that I haven't hammered down, I don't have this. Well, I actually do have it to some degree. So one thing I've heard is that Sharks job isn't the most attractive, and for obvious reasons, they're coming off a terrible season, and really, well, it helps a lot. Of course, the job is a lot more attractive because you had Macklin celebrating and Will Smith coming in, but it's still not a situation that is, okay, we're going to win the cup next year, and a lot of coaches want to win the cup next year or be in the hunt for it. Good example that I've reported is I know that Mike Grier talked with Todd McClellan early in the process. And I don't know specifically if he asked Todd, hey, will you be the coach of this? I'm not that far ahead into it, but I do know that from what I understand that both sides thought it wouldn't be a good fit. And what I take from that is that Todd, a veteran coach, wants to win. He doesn't want to be part of another rebuild like he was in L.A., and obviously the Sharks situation is a rebuild, so it's not a good fit. A guy like, say, Jay Woodcroft, which I was asked a lot about. I don't know if the Sharks actually talked with Jay or not, but one source pointed out to me, and I think this was very smart, is that if you're Jay and there are no jobs out there for you, right? The Sharks job was the last job that got filled, last head coaching vacancy that got filled, that maybe you just wait for midseason. Because likely there's going to be a team that's going to need a coach at midseason. It's going to be a better team, a team that needs some kind of charge, some kind of surge. And whatever that team is likely going to be a lot closer to the playoffs in terms of talent and in the standings than the Sharks will be. So I thought that was a good point too.
Yep.
And the other part of it too is I think that Warsawski does have the leg up in terms of having worked with Grier for a couple of years here, sort of knowing how to work with Mike there too, that, you know, maybe there's a little bit of chemistry there, that sort of thing, right? And so that's good for Mike too. And yeah. So that could be more attractive than, say, a Marco Sturm, who is, I know that was sort of all the candidates that sort of developed, right? Like your Elliot Friedman reported Blashill, he reported Jeremy Colleton, he reported a couple of days ago Neil Graham, Texas Stars head coach. I reported Jeff Halpern myself as sort of coaches of interest, right? All these guys, right? And mm-hmm. also McClellan too. But I think that Marco Sturm was sort of the popular choice, right? Just because of all the obviously Sharks fans remember him. He was a great Shark and also had a lot of success. Head coach of the Team Germany 2018 Olympic team, led him to a silver medal.
Sure.
But I think that's one just kind of guess that Warsawski, there's that familiarity there, right? I think that it's possible too that sort of edge that I mentioned, that could be there too. There's also, I'm curious, there's other things. I'm going to dig on that more. I don't have to answer fully mm-hmm. why Warsawski over Sturm, but I have a couple guesses there that I wanted to share with you guys, just because I know it is sort of a hot topic, and that's something that I think I'll dig into more over the summer and figure it out.
And I know that you don't have the answer for this, and this is all fan speculation that's mm-hmm. been going on for 2 years now. But basically the thought was, like, you're hiring this guy as your assistant coach to eventually kind of be the successor to David Quinn. And, like, you know, this is all speculation, but is that something that played into Greer's, like, thinking here? Was like, I'm going to lose this guy to another team if I don't make this move now, kind of thing. I wonder. I don't know, but that's what I wonder.
Well, Friedman did say that there was a sense of that from the Sharks, that they didn't want to lose him. But yeah. I don't know if, like, from the beginning, from 2022, that this was the plan. Maybe this was the plan in the back of Mike's mind. I really don't know on that one. But I would venture to guess that it would be news to David Quinn that when he got hired in 2022, that they were also hiring his replacement. So.
I know, but people had been mentioning. I remember when he got hired, the people said that kind of thing, and it was always like, sure. But funny how things work out, you know?
Yeah. I would guess that wasn't necessarily like that wasn't necessarily the laid out plan. I guess I'll put it that way. It could have been in the back of Mike's mind. I really don't know on that part of it, right? But it kind of doesn't make sense too, because it's not like David Quinn is, I don't know, a Daryl Sutter, like, going into his last job. I mean, clearly does need a replacement kind of guy, right? Or a Bruce Boudreau that's been has coached for a long time, right? David Quinn was going to a second head coaching job. He's in his 50s, I believe, is still of the age where another head coaching job could happen in the future for him at the NHL level. And so I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know this for a fact, but I doubt Quinn would have taken a job if he was like, wait, you're just going to replace me in 3 years, no matter what I do.
Yeah. So sacrificial altar kind of thing. You know? Yeah. We're going to be horrible.
I doubt it.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
It is, again, possible that in Greer's mind, that not that that was the plan, but more like, okay, well, I have a guy that I obviously interviewed in 2022 for the head coaching job. I didn't interview Brian Wiseman. I didn't interview Scott Gordon. As far as I know, they didn't interview those guys for the head coaching job. And so if push comes to shove, and push did come to shove this in April with David, that you have a guy there that you like, that is,
yeah,
that's sort of tailor-made and ready to take over if indeed you want him to do it. But to go as far as that's been the plan since 2022, I highly doubt it.
Yeah. I think it's more like a backup plan, if anything.
Yeah, it's like a plan C, not even a backup. Like, I would go even plan C, plan D.
Yeah.
Because, again, if that was like the direct plan, then I doubt that Quinn would have taken a job and they would have hired somebody that was, you know, much closer, nearer the end of his coaching career than in like the middle of it, like Quinn is.
It's always good to have redundancies, you know? Yeah. It's good to have like backup plans and plans on plans. And,
I want to add too that for Warsawski, sorry to jump in, interrupt you there, but that Warsawski needed, I think, NHL experience on his resume. So it was a good move for him to go to the Sharks, even if it wasn't for the head coaching job in 2022. Mm-hmm. I don't know this for a fact, but I do know for a fact that the Sharks didn't talk with David Carlisle, which I've reported mentioned many times, right?
David Carl.
Yep. I don't know why. Yeah, Carl. Yeah, I think Randy Carl. I was there. It is. Randy Carl. Yeah. Yep. David Carl. Anyway, so I know they didn't talk with him, and I know a lot of Sharks fans wanted the Sharks to talk with him. I know that he was going into the offseason, he was like the hot sort of new name into the hopper for head coach, sure, as a two-time national champion and also just won a national championship with the University of Denver. But I mentioned this a couple months ago that David Carl had no pro hockey experience playing,
still,
coaching, right? And look, somebody may still hire him out of the University of Denver, which is fine. I'm not criticizing if anybody does that. And we do know it was reported that Carl did talk to Angel team about the head coaching job. It just wasn't the Sharks. So I think that for Wasowski, it was a good move to come up here and spend a couple of years and whatever, right? But again, does that make the plan to take this job? Not necessarily. It could have been, he could have had a couple of years here, and Wasowski interviewed for the Devils job. If the Sharks had been more successful the last couple of years, maybe Quinn stays as the head coach and then Wasowski moves on because the Sharks are better, more teams are interested in talking with Wasowski for HC, right? So there's all kinds of things like that are sort of possible there.
What makes me excited is that it just keeps, I'm continually not surprised, but just happy that, because I have like a little bit of like in the back of my brain, a tingle that just makes me think that we're just going to keep going back to the same thing that we used to do before and like trying to win when we shouldn't. And I'm just happy that they did something unexpected and something that kind of lends more to a rebuilding club than a we're competing now club, you know?
Like, you think so? And that's, I mean, I thought that was always clear. Even hiring,
I know, Quinn, I'm just happy. I'm not saying it's
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I'm just saying I have a little bit of a fear that it's going to go back to the way it was, and it doesn't look like it is. And that makes me happy.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the only guy that they've hired in the veins that we're trying to win now and it didn't work was Bugner, right? But that made sense in some ways because that team was sputtering and Bugner was right there and well-liked in the room and that sort of thing, right? And so that kind of made some sense. But Quinn, I always understood it to be, if you happen to be good, if you happen to catch fire with this team that you're given with Tommy Hurdle and Carlson and James Reimer down the line, Logan Couture, if you happen to be good, then we'll kind of keep it going. But if you're not good, then great. We're going to break this apart. And I think Quinn did that perfectly, adequately. And so what I mean by that is that, like, if it works out, great. But if you're not good, then you're also a guy that can be the development coach. Right. And so,
yeah.
So I think this is along those lines of that, of just the Sharks. I think Mike Greer knows where they are. I think, obviously, like I mentioned, the other kind of big name coaching candidates, like when I started the process of digging into this, right, I reached out to some people that probably were like, I'm never going to take this job. Why are you even texting me? Right. I never even got a chance. You know, the guy who went really fast, I never actually reached out to, was Craig Berube. And I was like, well, I'm going to do my due diligence, but he's not taking this job. Why the hell would he take this job? Right. And so there's sort of that too. Right. And so, yeah. So I think the Sharks are aware, and I think the industry is aware of where the Sharks are. And so they got a coach that, no discredit to Wasowski, young, up and coming, thought of as a top young coaching mind, all that sort of thing, right? Yep. But that's where they're at, though. They weren't going to get, you know, X big name, likely, Todd McClellan, Woodcroft, Sheldon Keefe, guys like that. Why?
Yeah. I'm just happy Mike Greer practices what he preaches, you know? That's all it is. Okay. I think that's the end of head coach watch and anything we have to say about Brian Wasowski for just now, unless you got anything else.
We'll find out more again on Monday. is going to have an introductory press conference. So we'll get to ask Mike Greer more about the process. Maybe we'll get in a question about Marco Sturm. I don't know if he'll answer that or not. And we'll talk with Ryan too. And I think one thing that is on a lot of people's mind that you allude to is, and we asked Henry Thorne this too, that the team was so bad last year. Why would you kind of bring it back?
Yeah. We'll ask
Warshawski, well, what are you going to do different?
Yeah. And I think he's probably like, I can't imagine how excited he is to getting like a bunch of young talent, new guys to come in and just a fresh start in some ways. Like, I can't imagine. He's probably so pumped.
He's going to have more of a chance than I think Quinn had last year. Yep. Like I said, I expect the Sharks to add to the team and add to the team in, I would say, and I've criticized this a lot over the last couple of months, right? But let's say a better team building way. And actually, I'm writing an article about this, about the kind of players that the Sharks need. And I don't want to go too deep into that story, but basically three things that I'm looking for, that I think the Sharks should be looking for. And if they're not looking for it, then they're going to repeat the same mistakes as last offseason. Mm-hmm. If whatever cap dump player, free agent player, trade player, if he doesn't fulfill these three things, maybe don't bring this guy in, because maybe he's not the guy to put around your young players. Just for example, a player that rhymes with the last name of Blimey. but three elements. Veteran leadership, actual ability, actual skill to play top nine forward or top four defense. And third thing, reasonable cost acquisition. So we can eliminate your Mitch Marners and Jake Gensels and things like that. Unless it's, like I said, my only caveat for that is if you can get somebody to come in for a 2-3 year huge AAV contract.
Like Stamkos.
Maybe. I mean, reach out to him. I'm sure he would rather win a Stanley Cup, but he's the kind of guy that's perfect because he fits obviously the skill. And if you can get him at, say, 3 years, $30 million, who cares, right? I mean, that's reasonable for the Sharks. It's a years I'm worried about. So 3 years is fine with me. And most importantly, the veteran leadership part, which I think a lot of people forget when they mention guys with that rhyme of Blimey. So
I love it. Yeah, he's gonna have a much better, you know, deck of cards than Quinn did. Quinn was entering like a loaded deck, I guess,
or against loaded
die. Against him.
Yeah, playing Russian roulette with five bullets in a chamber, one empty.
Trying to get more Vegas gambling puns in before we go to the draft, because you know we need to.
Well, you have another week to work on it. So
I got one more week, and then next week it's all gambling puns.
I think my Russian roulette thing was pretty good. So.
That was pretty good. Yeah, you know, Warsofsky's got like one bullet in the chamber, whereas Quinn had like
maybe
five.
Two or three, maybe but two, not quite five. So not quite five full, one empty. So
All right. So our last little bit of, I guess it's not news, but it's just more interesting names to talk about. You have confirmed some more of the 70 names that the Sharks draft or interviewed at the Combine. So
who are those names? Yeah, I keep working on this, and there are things that I reached out to during the Combine. Some guys got back to me later, and that's why I'm putting it out there. I'm not going to write a story about six names that the Sharks may or may not draft. And like I said, like I made sure to emphasize last week, I emphasize again that over 90 players came to the Combine. The Sharks interviewed at least 70 of them. And there's also players that the Sharks may not have interviewed, but they talked with throughout the season, right? So basically, just because the Sharks interviewed you, it doesn't mean much. They interviewed basically everybody. So the names that I got, though, just if you guys want to add this to your ledger. And I am pretty proud of myself in a sense that I think we had 20 names last week. And so I'm adding six more here. So that's almost a third of the Sharks interview list. So that's cool. Pretty deep list that I'm happy to have acquired here. But anyway, Andre Becker, this is just an alphabetical order. Liam Greentree, Tej Egenla, Maxim Massey, Ryder Ritchie, and Brody Ziemer.
Love it. And a few of these guys, just looking at that list, kind of fit the second round picks that they have, guys like Maxim Massey, Ryder Ritchie, Brody Ziemer, Andre Becker. I think all of those are more in the second plus range, as opposed to Greentree and Egenla are definitely more of that like 14 to 20 range. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and, you know, the whole point of the draft is they got to interview from pick one to 224 or whatever, because like you can trade up and down and players are everywhere in the draft. So got to be prepared anywhere you are. So
I know that.
Go ahead.
Ekeland obviously is going in the lottery and before 14, most likely, right?
Very likely.
Maybe top 10 or maybe even top 5, right? Yep. Greentree, I've seen listed in the 20s, right? So he might be a guy that Sharks could trade back for if they really like him, perhaps.
Sure.
Becker, Massey, Richie, Zimmer, are they second, third round, kind of that
yeah.
level, right?
Massey was like regarded as more like likely a first round pick this year, but he didn't have an amazing season. And he plays in the queue, and that's like nobody likes the queue anymore. He needs, Greentree, my weird, and I don't know what this is I believe that Liam Greentree is going to get drafted by the Washington Capitals. I just have this 17? Like, yeah, I just have this like premonition that it's going to be the Caps. He's like a very good skilled winger. He's tall and got a lot of skill. He's a little slow, his pace is a little low. I don't know why, it just for me feels like where the draft is falling theoretically, I think right around then it's going to be somebody that the Caps are going to go for. So that's my weird prediction. TJ, you're right. I think again, let's going top 10, probably wouldn't get past 8 or 9. I would say
Calgary 9. So
yeah,
do you, any of these guys look like possible for 33 or 42? Greentree, obviously, if he falls.
True.
Maybe 33, but any of these guys look, or is this that's a little too rich for Becker, Massey, Richie, and
Zimmer? I think it's too rich for Becker and Zimmer. It's probably around the range for Massey and Richie.
Okay.
I think Richie's fine. He's also similar to Greentree, but just a smaller guy, a little bit faster, but smaller.
Great hockey name, I gotta say. These are actually some really good names. I like Maxim Massey. That's a good hockey name.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's a good goal scorer. He's got some net front presence to him. He's good off the rush, Maxim Massey. I watched him a lot more last year, and I was thinking that he would do a lot better this year. He used to play with a prospect that I liked named Andre Loshko, who got drafted by Seattle last year. And he was like the line driver for that line last year as the underager, but or the draft minus one guy. But I don't know. It's tough with the Q because the competition level is just not as good as the other junior leagues. And if you're not really dominating, there's like a lot of track record that shows that like from the past, like 10, 15 years that you don't pan out as well as like the OHL and WHL guys do. If you're not really taking off on that, like explosive curve. And he didn't this year. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, actually we didn't talk about this before, but since I just wrote an article about it, let me ask you what you think about this. I wrote an article talking about trade ups, right? And how much it usually costs and to not use those draft pick value charts, at least, and this is nothing against Dom, but you can't do even up because when you're trading up, you got to pay more, especially if you're trying to trade into the top 10. And so I looked at every trade in the cap era, 50 trades on draft day involving first round picks, and using only picks because that makes the kind of valuation, trying to evaluate that, easier. And so anyway, I just wonder your thought about this, how much you like any of these guys. I know everyone loves, or Sharks fans, a lot of them are infatuated with Zeev Bouyam, obviously, but
yeah.
Okay. So 14, 33, 42. Would you trade all of those to, say, get into what's reasonable here? Because you got to give more than you get using the GSVA.
Yep.
Dom's value chart. Actually, Puckpedia has a good-looking one. Actually, if you haven't tried it yet, they have a good draft value chart that they worked with somebody that used to work with the Arizona Coyotes on that exact traffic value, their own, basically.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, it's actually, I put in the draft picks and they're more even. They make more sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think 14, 33, and 42 for Dom is equal to a top four pick. And again, this is, I want to really stress this. Dom puts in a lot of work. This is not a diss on it. It's just that when you're looking at this one, you got to build in, okay, that it can't be even up. It that doesn't make sense. So yeah. What is a 9.7 GSVA for 1433 and 42 does not equate to top four, but maybe that gets you like seven. You got to basically give more than you get back. Whereas for the Puckpedia one, I put in 1433 and 42, and I think equated to numbers. It was more equal. It made a little more sense to me. So I think it gave me back Ottawa at number seven.
Yeah.
So let's
I think that makes more sense.
So yeah. So let's say 1433 and 42. Let's say that could get you Ottawa number seven. I'm just throwing them out. I don't know if Ottawa is. I think Ottawa wants players back. That's what I thought I read. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Just
yeah.
Is anybody worth it to trade three good picks, 1433 and 42, to get to number seven for Booyam, Iginla, doesn't have to be defenseman, Dickinson, you name it. Who, you know, what do you think? Just a quick question for you off the top of your head. What do you think?
I think it really depends. The super high swing would be like, I like Demidov if somehow because of the Russian factor, he's sitting there at seven.
Would you do it?
I would, but nope. That's just me. I nope. think he's probably worth it. Guys like Levshinov and Booyam, I think I would do it.
Okay.
But if it's, and maybe Cady Lindstrom, because Lindstrom has like a super good profile, but the guys had a lot of injuries, and I don't know, I get kind of sketched out about his back injuries just personally, but and the way he came back and didn't look amazing after his back injury either. I watched him play after, and he didn't have the same kind of like, I mean, he's only like 17, 18 or whatever. So it's tough to say how he's going to come back from it. But I think it really depends on the person that's there. And the problem also with trading in is, yeah, maybe Ottawa wants to trade down, but I don't think Seattle's trading down. I think they want a defenseman, and there's going to be somebody there that they're going to try and take, like Dickinson or Booyam or whoever. I don't, if Iginla's on the board, there's no way. I don't think Calgary fans would, I think they would burn Calgary's arena to the ground if they traded back instead of taking Iginla. Like, couldn't imagine it. New Jersey, maybe, but why does New Jersey need more picks? Like,
right. They need a goalie, right? Yeah,
they need a goalie. With them, Buffalo, maybe, but then you're going from 14 to 11. Like,
I mean, unless... I guess New Jersey could make sense in the way that, what is it? You trade them 14 and 33 for 10. I'm just throwing that out there, right?
Yeah.
And then they can swing 14 back to Calgary. Like, giving them 14 for a goalie makes more sense than 10.
And then they still have 33.
You still have a decent pick. That's just a thought. I have no idea.
That's a good thought, though.
Me speculating. But still, though, I'm just wondering, the exercise is who's worth it in such. I'm not saying if Ottawa is really
at seven, I would say Demidov, Levshinov, and Booyam. But that's me. It's only because of where the Sharks are, and they need Levshinov or Booyam, and those are my top two defenders.
So if they didn't need a defense critically, then maybe not. Because those guys aren't that good in your mind. Because there are some Booyam's people who say that this defense, even at though there's so many of them, a lot of talk about them, but there isn't like necessarily for some people, at least I've read that there isn't like a Victor Hedman, there isn't a Rasmus Dahlin in this, right? A kind of you feel pretty good they're going to be a number one defenseman. There might be more a number two defenseman, maybe more of a middle pairing guy.
I think there's an interesting phenomenon with Booyam where we've both overhyped him and underhyped him. Like, there's like, I think there, if you look back at his season, like the things that he accomplished and how he played, and he played on huge stages and looked amazing and did it as a freshman and, you know, super young guy. And it's those kind of players in 5 years, you're like, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense why he's like a number one D man on that team, because he's just a very, very smart and skilled defender.
Okay.
And then we've overhyped him because we took that, and then we're like, we got to throw everything for Booyam. Mm-hmm. There is a legitimate chance that Booyam is a number one D, and everybody just kind of keeps trying to write him off because he's 6 foot and left-handed rather than like 6 foot two and right-handed. Because if he's 6 foot two and right-handed, he's like, it's basically Celebrini one, Booyam number two.
Really?
Like, I think so. 100%. I think people get a little bias on the way that they see a player, and Booyam isn't, he's 6 foot exactly, by the combine, and he's not huge, but the mold that they look for is the Levshinov, and the Levshinov gets, I mean, Levshinov has, they're very different players, but Levshinov fits that mold of I'm going to make the NHL because of the way that I look and play, whereas Bouillon has risk involved, but I think in the end of the day, Bouillon's probably a better hockey player.
You would pick Bouillon over Levshinov if you had the choice?
It's really tough. I'm still kind of deciding.
Let's say the Sharks had lost the lottery, right? And they were number three, right? I think that was the most likely pick for them of 1, 2, and 3. So let's say Sharks were number three. And let's say that you would have had a chance at Levshinov, whoever the number two goes. I don't know who that would be, but who do you pick there?
So two goes like Demidov or something?
Who knows?
So.
Yeah, who knows? Just you had the choice of Levshinov or...
It's basically the end of my... Or the past like 2 months of my ranking that I put Levshinov ahead of Bouillon.
Should we make this a cliffhanger and save next it for week. Next week? We can do that too. So
let's do it. Okay. That's when I'm going to make my final decision on the two.
Cliffhanger ever. Very exciting. Okay.
No, they've been flipping back and forth for a little while now.
Okay.
Like, and I don't, it's tough because I watch one and I fall in love with him, like Levshinov. And then every time I've watched Bouillon, I've never been unimpressed. Every single time. I'm always like, this guy's really fucking good. And if he was 6'2" and right-handed, he'd probably be, you know, surefire top four. But he's not. He's 6' and left-handed, so everybody thinks he's going to bust like Ryan Merkley, you know? Which he's not Ryan Merkley at all. Or like, I don't know. He could be, can't even think of a mediocre comp. Like, yeah, Ekblad maybe. So I still think at the end of the day, there's too much of a track record for Bouillon being very, very good.
Okay. Well, looking at cliffhanger. So.
Cliffhanger it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the biggest issue the Sharks are going to have is who do you trade down with? You know, maybe Ottawa, maybe New Jersey.
Or trade
maybe
up. Right. Yeah. Trade for up sure. With. For sure. That was sort of the point of my article that like, see a lot of comments like it's just as easy as, hey, give them the fair value picks. Of course, that team will take it. And it's not, especially when you're talking about the premium areas of the draft where teams are like, wait a minute, though. Like, we have more certainty about this prospect that we're not going to just, even if it's fair, according to draft pick value charts, we're not going to take your deal. You really have to overpay because we like William too, or we like Levshinov, or we
or
like
Ginla or Lindstrom,
et cetera, down the line, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas the draft pick value charts make a bit more sense when we're talking about later in the draft, or yeah. But at the high end, though, no, they don't. And so
it always reminds me of
you're gonna have to overpay.
I used to play East Side Hockey Manager, like aggressively.
Yeah, I was great at that game, yeah,
yeah. But like
Stanley Cup winner, Brent Cron, maybe.
If you're ever trying to like trade into like the top 10 or top 5, you have to trade like so much more just for that top 10. Like if you try to get to like pick 11, it doesn't cost that much, but the game will program in top 10, meaning you need to like give them way more. And that's honestly real in real life too.
That's accurate.
It's not always top 10, but there are levels of the draft and that they all know that. So there's like, yeah, if you're going to get into this level, you need to pay extra. Right. So that's where the draft pick value charts kind of fall apart sometimes.
That's why I ask you, like, are you willing to risk it all?
Yeah, I would. I would.
And who is worth risking it all for?
Yeah, I think for me, it's Demidov, Levshinov, Bouillon.
Okay.
Maybe Lidstrom.
Okay.
Maybe. Okay. But I'm worried a little bit about Lidstrom's back.
Okay.
Guys that I don't think it's really worth doing it is... I like Parekh a lot. I don't think it's worth risking all of that when there's still a chance that he could bust out and you've lost three picks for one guy.
Well, that's the same case with Demidov and the guys you like more, right? So again, that's how much do you like that guy that you're willing to even offer that, right? Even willing to call up Ottawa and be like, hey, we'll give you 1433 and 42 for 7.
Yeah. I think other ones like Siliaev, I think there's guys that fill his mold that are going to be around 14. So what's the point if he's not there? But you know, this is all speculation.
Yeah,
guys like one of these guys is going to pop and be amazing, like Katten, Aginla, Helenius. Somebody's going to be a surprise, like first liner, and then they're going to get stuck at like 10 or 11, and it's going to be a great pick in like 5 years. But you never know which one. Like, it could be very possible Berkeley Catton is too tiny for the NHL, or he's too perimeter for the NHL, or he's too, you know, he's not. He's actually a very aggressive player. But anyway, this is all the fun part of the draft, which is speculation and then sitting there and thinking through it all as a fan or as a outside observer. That's why I love it so much. But we're going to see you all next week. I think we're done. I don't think we have anything else to talk about.
Yeah, I think that's it for today. Listen, don't leave yet, though. We have a great interview with Henry Thrun.
Yes, we do. Yeah,
some excellent. Colorful language is used in it, so it's fun.
Yeah, and shout out to Henry for taking time in his off-season regimen to talk with us very early in the morning.
Well, it was early for me.
Yeah, early for Shang. Not so early for me or Henry, but... and next week we'll probably have a lot more draft coverage. I think that's probably what
but that makes sense. Yeah,
that's going to be our last show before the draft, so we'll do a little bit we'll do like a top 32 for my personal list. I think that'll be great, and maybe have a prospect analyst of some kind on. We'll see. But hope you guys have a good week, and we will see you all next week. Bye.
All right, today we have a special, special guest. You guys know him. You guys love him. It's Henry Thrun. And we're having Henry Thrun now, Sharks rookie defenseman this past season, because he worked directly with Ryan Warsawski. Ryan Warsawski, the new head coach of the Sharks. Ryan Warsawski also ran the Sharks defense last year. And so we thought Henry would be a great person to talk to about Ryan, about the defense, and also about Ryan's ability to develop young players. Henry, how's it going?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
So, Henry, wanted to get – okay, we're going to go with the tough one here first, all right? So, okay, so Ryan Warsawski is in as head coach right now. He was on the Sharks coaching staff last year. He was working with the defense and the penalty kill. So a cynic would ask you, okay, so it's a coach that was part of a staff that led you guys to not a lot of points last year. Mm-hmm. And so what is going to be different here, you think?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think you know, speaking from a personal perspective, I thought, you know, Ryan did a great job with the defensemen and really worked with us on a personal level. And I think that's obviously maybe the counting stats weren't there from a wins perspective. But I felt that guys took steps forward this year. And I think that's Ryan's someone that, you know, in his past positions, he's proven that his style of coaching can produce wins. So hopefully for us, it'll be something that it'll be sort of a springboard for us to kind of take some steps forward this upcoming year.
How do you think you yourself got better under Warsawski last year?
Yeah, he talked to me a lot about just game management and sort of understanding the difference between a pro and a college game. You know, obviously in college, every team's got a handful of guys that can kind of dictate the pace and night in, night out can sort of dominate play. And I think in the NHL, it's a little different where everyone is a really good player and just understanding kind of who you are as a defenseman and how you can help the team win was a big thing for me to kind of recognize this year and try to make strides in. Because I think, you know, throughout the year, I thought that I started to learn a little bit more, you know, how to manage a game, especially on, you know, back-to-backs or when the games start piling up, how to basically just be reliable and be someone that can be trusted to go out there and in different situations. And that's something that Ryan, I thought, worked closely with me with. And it was something that I thought he'd provide a lot of good perspective on.
What particular tips did he give to you in terms of that management?
Yeah, a lot of it had to do with puck management, honestly. You know, obviously on the defensive side, you know, you're defending night in, night out, and that's something that's is a little more thrown at you and reactive. But when you have the puck, it's a little more proactive. And we talked about that a lot and just understanding, you know, there's gonna be nights where the team is playing really well, and we're gonna have more chances and we're gonna be kind of going up and down, and there's gonna be nights where as a group we're just fighting it and we're not getting a lot. And as well, from a personal level, there's, you know, throughout the course of 82 games, there's gonna be good nights and there's gonna be bad nights. So I think he just taught me to sort of recognize that and realize you know, if there's nights you're feeling it, try to take advantage of it. And then if there's a night where, you know, if the game doesn't start off the way you want it to, try to just reset and not chase the game really. I think there was one game this year, I think it was against Tampa, that I made a mistake the first shift, and then I had a really great rest of the game. It was something that I was no one would really notice, but it was something that I talked about, because it was something that leading up to that, there were moments that I felt during times in games I was trying to chase the game if I made a mistake. So for me, that was something that goes unnoticed, but from a personal perspective, that's directly due to Ryan's coaching.
So that's something where Warsawski, he taught you to maybe not think too much about that mistake you made, right? To be able to move on from it.
Yeah, I think if anything, I like when I, if that if a mistake would happen, it wasn't necessarily me beating myself up over it. It was more so me trying to make up for it and try to do
Sure.
something really positive and maybe forcing your hand a little bit, rather than kind of naturally letting the game come to you. And I think it was something that's yeah, it's he talked to me a lot about it, and he sort of gave me some players to sort of watch and how they conduct themselves and sort of get through the night to night grind of the NHL. And it was something that I felt I started to make strides in towards the end of the year. And again, it was all due to Warzo's coaching.
In general, why do you think that he is? Obviously, the Sharks are in a position with yourself and Will Smith coming in, and Willie McLain and Colin Graf and Fabian Zetter. I mean, just down the line, maybe Macklin Celebrini coming in too. That the Sharks are going to be a very young team. And so, just in general, what makes Ryan, in your opinion, a strong development coach?
Yeah, well, I think one of the first things that stands out to me is that I think he's the youngest coach in the NHL now.
Yeah, he is right now. Yep.
So,
He's younger than me.
which obviously just provides a lot of just someone that you can relate to as a younger player. You know what I mean? It's not someone that's maybe older and has a different coaching style and doesn't see eye to eye as much with younger players. So I think Ryan being younger and having coached in lower leagues in the NHL will have a lot of great perspective on sort of how to utilize younger guys, how to put them in situations to succeed, how to manage them and understand where they're at within the season. So I think he's gonna I anticipate him doing well with that. As I mentioned, it's something that I thought he did a good job with me in the past year of that. So I think obviously you had mentioned Smith, Zetsaki, all those guys. Like it's something that I imagine that's one of the main reasons he was chosen for the job, and I anticipate he'll do a good job of it.
And not to be, you mentioned that Ryan had a great mannerism with younger players, and I want to contrast him a brief, just his style with David Quinn. And David had, as far as I understand, he got along with yourself, with Willie McLain and guys like that, right? So this is not to say that he didn't, but I want to make sure people listening don't misunderstand that. But how is Ryan's style, if any way, how is it different than David's?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Chang. I think, as you'd mentioned, David was someone that we all got along with very well, and was someone that definitely as well took the time on a personal level to get to know the players and kind of understand where they were, both physically and mentally. And I think that Ryan will echo that and sort of put his own spin on that. And I think in terms of style, obviously haven't seen him in a head coaching role, or haven't played for him under a head coaching role, so can't speak too closely to his style. But I know he's someone that he likes to give his players confidence, like them to feel good. Someone that's from a defensive perspective, definitely likes to attack and doesn't necessarily want to lay off a ton. So I think again, I can't speak too much on how we'll play as a group. I don't know how it'll contrast too much to Quinny's style, but someone that's at least from a defensive corp and an individual way, I know he's someone that definitely likes us to play aggressive and not necessarily sit back.
And one thing that a another Shark player told me about Warsawski was that just his communication is so, it's very direct. It's very clear what his message is at all times. Is that something that you found, especially since you had to work so much with him?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that it's something that is it's easy to do as a coach to be have direct communication, but it's hard to have the players understand that and respect it. So I think that's something
Mm.
Ryan's able to do because he has the respect of our players. So there's nights he'll tell me like, "You sucked," but okay, cool. I trust you. You've given me when I've been good, you've told me that, and when I've been decent, you've told me that, and we've worked. So when you tell me that I'm not doing well, then I agree with you. I'm on the same page as you, and now let's figure out how to get through it. So it's something that being direct with your players, I think, is something that's important, but it's another thing to sort of have the respect to them and understand that it's going to be received and something that the players actually agree with and understand with. So I think he does a good job of
Is the phrase "you sucked," is that what he says, or is the phrase more colorful?
that. No, yeah, he didn't have anything too colorful this year, at least that I heard of. But again, someone that is going to be a good communicator, both within game and after game, which I think is important too. It's someone that you got to recognize within a game. There's sometimes some guys like to talk a lot on the ice with the coach. Guys like to just go about their business, and I think he recognizes sort of how each guy wants to go about it within the game, and kind of respects that. And then I think after the game, or just on practice days, or whatever, he does a good job sort of communicating kind of where you're at and where the coaching staff wants you to get to.
That's interesting because his old GM with the Chicago Wolves, Wendell Young, mentioned to me that Ryan is a guy that knows the strengths of each player and tries to kind of cater to that. But it's also interesting that you mentioned that knowing the strengths of the player in terms of communication too. It's not just strengths on the ice, but just how each player communicates. That's something that Ryan takes the time to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just thinking to our D, some guys like to kind of bounce ideas off of Wars during the game and see what he's thinking. Other guys just like to kind of go out there and do the thing. And if in between periods there's something needs to be said, then that's fine. But I think that's something that, it's a mutual respect. He respects us, we respect him, and I think it's something that it provides a really beneficial sort of coaching style because it As you mentioned, it's something that instills confidence in the players. It lets them kind of be natural and kind of do what they do best.
Are you a bouncer of ideas or are you a quiet rookie?
No, I tend to be more quiet. It's something that's I like to watch the game and I like to kind of pick up things and recognize certain areas that I'll be able to exploit or certain areas that I need to hone in on. Obviously, if Ryan says something to me, then it's something that I'll fully take in and sort of go through that. But I mean, I'm sure you guys see we have the iPads on the bench and there's so many tools and different things that some guys like using that and like looking at really specific plays. Other guys just go out there and kind of go more with the flow of the game.
Are you an iPad guy or go with the flow guy?
No, I don't look at the iPad very often.
No? Okay.
If I look at the iPad, it's usually something bad happens. And I gotta
Usually you suck, so.
yeah, usually something bad happened and I gotta make an understanding of it. But no, I'm usually go with the flow. Maybe sometimes I'll peek at it just to try to get a very specific thing like on a system or a face off, and I might have misread it the first go around and see like, okay, like where was the second forechecker or where did that guy go off the face off? So I might use it for very specific things. But other than that, I don't look at it too often.
Yeah, I wonder if Ryan will be more direct with me this year. Your story sucked, Shang. Well,
Your
yeah.
story is
Sorry,
terrible.
you know what?
Questions are
Write a
terrible.
story every day. I gotta ask questions every day, man. All
Yeah.
right. Not all of them are gonna be bangers, Ryan. I'm sorry, but my last one for you, and then I think Keegan's got one for you too, is I've heard stories about Ryan's competitiveness, and I heard this story back when he was coaching Stephen Lawrence, your former teammate, back with, I think it was the Charlotte Checkers. And I guess, oh, no. I think Stephen was with the Wolves. Actually, I don't remember where he was with. Actually, no, I think it was the Checkers. Anyway, though,
Must have been, yeah. They
the
came
Checkers
from
were,
Carolina, right?
yeah,
So.
right. So anyway, a Calder Cup finals. Stephen isn't playing because I think Stephen's coming off an injury, but they're doing a 3-on-3, whatever. And Stephen is healthy enough to be on the ice. And Stephen tells his story. Actually, I guess there's tape of it, but it's been buried somewhere. But there's tape of Ryan Warsawski, who, as you mentioned, is a pretty young man, and Stephen Lawrence getting at it in practice, and then Ryan just bowls Stephen Lawrence over just so they can win. So just so he can win that 3-on-3, whatever they're doing at practice. Does that sound like Ryan Warsawski to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can recall even We were playing in St. Louis towards the end of the year, and it was after one of our it was either pregame state or a practice day. And Mario and I were taking one timers at the end of practice, and War showed up and started. He's like, "Let me go, like let me jump in," and started bombing one tees and just chirping us and telling us how he should be on the half wall and the power play and all that stuff, and just basically showing us that he had a better one timer than us. So it's something that, yeah, I'd say he has that natural inner drive. So it'll be exciting to see kind of how he utilizes that as a head coach.
Does Ryan Warsawski have a better one-timer than you and Mario Ferraro?
No.
Bam.
Oh.
You hear
That's the highlight.
that,
He might disagree, but
Ryan? Yeah, you might disagree.
it's going to be the first player coach in the NHL in just a little bit.
Yeah.
I guess a couple more questions for you before we get you out of here. First one I wanted to ask is, what does your summer look like in terms of your training? And then are you having any kind of like scrimmages or play with like Will Smith or Colin Graf or any other San Jose guys in Boston?
My training right now, it's a lot of gym work, just kind of getting the body reset from the season, and right now starting to build in some muscle and add some strength. And starting to get back on the ice and get my skates in. So for me, there's certain areas that I've kind of honed in on and things I'm trying to improve on. And in terms of scrimmages and seeing those guys around, I'll see them. We'll have some scrimmages and some games pick up in the Boston area, specifically in the back half of summer. So we all work out in different gyms, but those are guys that I'll start to run into just as we kind of all the Boston guys start to get together and start playing some games.
And you mentioned like specific things you wanted to work on. Was any of those like at the direction of Warzo or any of the other coaches?
Yeah. I met with Ryan at the end of the year last year, as well as Greerzy, and we kind of worked through some things that I needed to improve on. And one of those was being stronger below the dots, and just sort of my board and net front play, which is something that I agree with and something that is one of my main focus areas this summer. So that's something I'm kind of dialing in on. And it's an area that is most of my game is played down there as a defenseman. And it's something that within at college, it did take me probably a year or two to figure it out in college and sort of recognize how to use my body. And granted, I got older in college and was able to kind of take advantage of that. So it's something that's, I think, definitely my focus is on one of my focuses is on that area, which I think will just enable me to sort of kill more plays and be able to sort of help us get the puck out of the zone too.
Well, you better work on that because Ryan's going to mess you up in practice. That's
yes.
what Stephen Lawrence says. So.
Yeah.
All right. Shane, you got anything else?
Nope.
Perfect. All right, Henry, thank you so much for joining us. So hopefully we'll have you again on soon, maybe next year sometime, maybe.
Awesome. Yeah, works for me. Thank you, guys.